think you have it together, like you got everything going the direction you wanted to, and it's like, crash. You know, all of a sudden the circumstances change, and what you thought was going to be perfect and make you happy doesn't. And a lot of us, that's the way we approach things in life. I mean, it seems normal. If my circumstances are how I want them to be, I'll be happy. And Jesus had a completely different take on happiness. He had a completely different message. He said, it's not as much about my circumstances as about the condition of my heart. In fact, there's something about connecting with Him that seems to transcend my circumstances. And so even the circumstances that would normally make me think, well, this is going to be impossible to be happy, because of my connection with Him, I can be happy. And He tells this story. It's called a parable. Really, it's just a story. When Jesus started out, He was like on tour. So, you know, he was 30 years old. He'd been a carpenter for a number of years. He came from a family, just like we all did. He had a mom and a dad. He had brothers and sisters. And his family had a reputation. There was sort of like, there were stories going around about his family. You know, because the story was that Joseph wasn't his father. He didn't look anything like Joseph, and it was like one of those things, you know. And so there were stories going around his family when they grew up. But like so many things about Jesus, there was what seemed like contradictions. Because people would think, well, gosh, what kind of family is this? And, you know, their reputation was like a little bit. But when they saw the way he lived and treated people, it made them think, well, I don't know, he seems different than his reputation. Then like when he's 30 years old, he goes on tour, he starts this ministry, and he was living at a time where there's one huge dominant religion. So, you know, you can be in a family that has a dominant religion, just your little family, your little micro family, you know, like there's a dominant religion in your family, and then maybe you decide you don't want to be a part of that religion, and that can like cause stuff. But sometimes there can be a whole city or a whole state or there can be a whole nation that has a dominant religion. He lived in a time there was a dominant religion. Judaism was the religion of the day. And it was at one of those breaking points where a lot of people were leaving the church. And the reason they were leaving the church is that they felt like they had done everything they could. They'd done everything the church said and they still weren't happy. And they didn't feel connected to God. So tons of them were leaving the church. And you know, like in our day, when people like decide, they find all other different ways to make sense of life, and so he's 30 years old, and he steps into that, and he starts touring, and when he tells people, remember last week, a lot of people felt like, well, there's no way you can be with God and be happy, and you can have a church experience that can can pretty much seal that into your heart. It's like there's absolutely no way I could ever be with God and be happy at the same time. Because if you're going to be with God, well, you'll be unhappy because anything that's fun in life, you can't do. And that was the culture that he came from. That's how people, that's really how they felt about life when he was like on tours. Like people would go see him and he would say things. They're like, well, gosh, you look like you might be saying something that I might be able to do. And then they think, oh, wait a minute, I can't do that because I can't be happy. No way, because I've done church before and it was anything but happy for me. And in our day, a lot of people step away from the church because they feel like, oh, you know, you can't believe in science if you go to church. And, you know, they have all kinds of ideas about like sex in the church and you got to give your money to the church. And, you know, it just doesn't matter which church. And that's how it was. And he goes on this speaking tour and he starts to tell people, you know, but there's something that you should hear because you can be happy and be with God and people are watching him and they're listening and they're thinking, really? Honestly? And he tells him this story this one night. He tells him a story. Remember last week, let me review the two brothers in the story. And so these two brothers are very different. Now, I was telling you last week about the younger brother. He's the thrill seeker. So the way he's going to be happy in life is he's going to like chase all the fun and he's going to like get all the thrills and he gets this money together and he goes a long ways away from his family so they can't see how he lives. And remember I told you the story, like I went a long ways away from my family so they wouldn't see how I lived. And he just like, he has wild, like he has a wild lifestyle and it's all about excitement. Here's what he discovers, that excitement and happiness are not the same thing. That there's this distinction between the two. You can have tons and tons of fun, and that's good, and you can be very, very excited, and that's great, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be happy. And he discovers that about life. He's like, God dang, man. I mean, I thought everything was going to, I was just going to have all this fun, and then I'd be really, really happy, and he's not. And maybe you know someone like that, and like maybe they're tearing up life right now, and they're having a lot of fun. But you just get this eerie feeling with your, like when you're with them, they don't seem happy to me. And that's just younger. And so remember what I said about him is that he reaches the time in his life where he's like tried to have so much fun, and now all the money's gone, and then all the money bought these friends, and they're gone now too. And he's at the kind of like at the rock bottom of everything. And here's what shifted him right here. Here's what shifted him is he was doing things that he never thought he would. So it's like the time in life where you're reflecting and you're thinking about the things that you did, and you recognize I've actually done some things that I never thought I would do. I got there at one point, and you know, I had my limit. You know what I mean? I had my limit. This is as far as I'll go. And then when I stepped over that line, and I really did, I just thought, gosh, I saw other people do this, but I never thought I would do that. I never thought I would do that. And then you did do it. And you just, like, it brings you to a place, you're like, whoa. And that's where this younger brother was, and that's when he finds God. Right in the middle of all of it. He's not cleaning up his act. He's not trying to be religious. He's not even going to church. And he, all of a sudden, he just, like, at that point, he realizes, whoa. That's when he finds God. So remember, like, he rehearses this story. And in the story, he decides that he's going to go home and ask his dad. Here's his big dream. My dad owns a family business. I'm going to go home and see if he'll give me a job. Because I don't know where else to turn to. All my money, all my friends are gone. I feel bad about myself. I've lost my self-respect. And by the way, you can put whatever front you want out there, but when you lose your self-respect, you know it. I mean, one of the most painful things in life is to lose your own self-respect because you're like, gosh, I never thought I would go this low, but I did. I never thought I'd hit a girl, but I did hit a girl. I never thought I'd steal from them, but I did steal from them. It's like when you're like you recognize, and only you know, and you go to sleep at night, and you kind of replay in your mind, you're like, damn, I never thought I'd do that. That's where he is. So his only option is I'm going to go back and see if my dad will give me a job. Maybe I can be a laborer or something in the family business. And so he comes back, and he finds out something. Here's what he finds out. Regardless of where you are and how close you feel to God, God always wants to be close to you. And you can write it in your notes, the big idea, God wants to be close to you. And I know when you're feeling like that, you're like, well, God, I'm not even thinking about God right now. And besides, I mean, he would never want to be close to me because think of what I've done and how I am. And I don't go to church. I don't read the Bible. I've never seen a Bible in my life. And I'm not religious. And my life has been anything but Christian. God wants to be with people that go to church. And God wants to be with people that are Christians. They don't want to be with me. And Jesus shows up on the scene. He says, you're dead wrong. Because I actually want to be close to you. Let me prove it to you. I'll tell you a story. And you know, this younger son, he sees his dad, and he's just thinking, you know, I'm going to see my dad, and you know, he's already mad at me. And this is the story. The dad runs out to him, and great parents are always like this, by the way. Great parents will always stay close to their children, no matter how far their children run away from them. And so, you know, the dad runs out to his son, and he grabs him, and he kisses him. It's like a man kiss, I guess, you know. It's like kind of weird, but it says it in the Bible. He kisses him, and he hugs him. And his son stops and says, Dad, listen, I know I really screwed up. I just was hoping I could get a job. And his dad said, a job? You're not going to work for me. That's the kind of relationship we have. You don't work to earn my love because you're my son. You're in the family. You were never out of the family. And so he throws this huge party. Remember I told you last week, it's not like a little party with like some chips and some dip. I mean, this is a full-on, you know, ice chest of soda and you know, tons and tons of, like, you know, steaks and ribs and potato salad. And, like, this is a full-on greaser party. I mean, like all kinds of, like, which is just a really good party. And here's why he throws the party, because he wants everybody to know that he loves his son. Because, listen, when your son ditches you, this is what the son did. He went to his dad and he said, I can't wait for you to die. Because I know someday this business is going to be mine and my brother's. I can't wait for you to be dead before I get my money. Give me my money now. And his dad does it. He actually does it. He divides up the property and he gives half to one son and half to the other. And then when the son comes back, you know what the city is thinking. They're thinking, he punked you so hard. I mean, like, you should run him off. I mean, what are you talking about? And some people, by the way, they've been away from God a long time, and they think, well, I can't go back to God, because if I go back to God, I'm going to get a big whooping. I mean, he's going to run down everything I ever did in my life. It's going to be very, very embarrassing for me when I go back to God. They don't even think God's going to throw a party for him because he's so happy to have him back. Now, I know people that are straight up educated, or they've just been away from God a long time, and here's what holds them back. They're like, no way, man. I can't even put my toe in that water because I know the minute I do, all that I'm going to find out is I'm going to be punished for all the things I did when I was away. And so when the father comes and says, I'm throwing a party, the son doesn't know what to do. He's just like standing there. He's like, I never thought that this is what it would be like. Now, the older brother, he catches this and he sees it and he sees what's going on. And this is when he comes into the story. Let me read it to you. So it's in your notes. Meanwhile, the older son, so the older brother, older son, was in the field. He's a working guy. He's always working. He's the perfect guy. He's all about image. He's nothing like the younger son. It's like, I'm the guy that wants the family to always look like they're perfect, and I keep all the rules, and I go to church. I'm really a religious guy. I'm the guy that comes across like everybody. I'm the perfect son. So he's out in the field working where he should be. He'd never, like, go to a party in the middle of the day. Okay, he's always back on time from his breaks, and, you know, he never cheats on his lunch hour, and this guy is like the guy, you know. So he's out in the field. When he came near the house, he heard the music and dancing, so he called one of the servants and asked him, what's going on? Your brother has come, he replied, and your father has killed the fattened calf. That's like the great steaks and everything, because he has him back safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out to him, pleaded with him, but he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who squandered all your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him? My son, the father said, you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead. He's alive again. He was lost, and he's found. So let's say a quick prayer, just to bow your heads for a moment. God, thank you for a chance to see something out of the Bible tonight. And I pray that you would give us the power to open our hearts. Regardless of how we walked in this place, what our background's been like, how we ended up here tonight, I'm just asking you that you'd open our hearts. In your name, Jesus, amen. So right in your notes, the very first thing I want you to see is heal your anger. So look at what he says here now. He says to him, he says, the older brother became angry and refused to go in. So answer this question in your mind. What do you refuse to do because you're mad? What do you refuse to do because you're angry? And I know that one. It's like when I know I should do something, but I won't do it because I'm mad. And that's where this older brother is. He knows what he should do, but he's so angry, he won't do it. And that's kind of like a weird place to be, isn't it? It's like, you know what you should do. You like really know the right thing, and you kind of want to do it. But you're so angry, you're like, no way, man. I ain't going talking to them. But you know what you should do. But you're angry. And notice in the story, he doesn't go check out the party himself. He is so angry, he won't even go look for himself. And listen now, listen. He doesn't call the father. He doesn't ask. He doesn't say, go get my dad. Go get my father. He doesn't even, like, he doesn't try to talk to his dad about it either. Now, the younger son, here's how he gets distance from his family. He goes off to another, like, he goes, like, you know, he goes down to, like, Vegas. And he's down in Vegas where nobody can see him, and he's, like, tearing it up down there. That's where he's at. Like, nothing can happen to me. Nobody can see how I really am, the things I really do. Which isn't that weird because nobody sees it. It's so weird, you know, what's done in Vegas stays in Vegas. What's done in Vegas stays in your own heart. You see it. You carry it. You live with it. That's how it is. So you go down, well, nobody sees. Nobody sees. Here's who sees. You see. And so, you know, like he's like, so he gets in, the older brother, he stays home. But listen, he's just as far away from his father as the younger one. He can't talk to him. I don't know if you can talk to your dad. I didn't have a dad when I grew up. So sometimes I think back and I think it really would have been great to have someone to talk to, work things out with. But you know, if you have a father, it doesn't always turn out that way. Just because you have a dad, that's cool. Just leave it right where it's at. Just because you have a dad, it doesn't mean that you're going to be able to talk to him. No, you're good. Just stay right there. And so this son is so far away from his dad that he can't talk to him. He can't go to his dad and say, "Dad, listen, why are you throwing him a party? Talk to me about this because I'm confused and I'm angry and I need to talk, Dad." He can't do that. He goes and gets a servant and he says, "It's like someone safe." Let me say something to you. It never works to avoid the person that you need to talk with. So he goes gets a safe person. Have you ever done that? It's like you really need to talk to this person over here, but you don't talk to them. You'll go get someone really, really safe that doesn't mind if you gossip and vent and you tell all your stuff to. They never say anything to you. They're really safe. And people even say, like, "I'm safe for you," or "That's my safe person." Okay. But it's not going to work. And let me tell you why it isn't going to work. Because he's still angry. He's still mad because he talks to the servant. Nothing changes for him. You can't avoid the person that you need to talk with. And so here's what happens. You know, the servant tells him, he says, "Oh, your dad, you know, he's killed the fattened calf." And he's like furious. He's like, "No way. Like, my dad is still spending money on that loser." Now, in the story, the father comes out and pleads with him. So he leaves the party and comes out and pleads with him. One thing about this dad, he always reaching for his children. So the younger son runs off and spends all the money and does all the stuff, and he doesn't even get home, and the dad runs out. And I don't care who you are, what you think. Here's the truth. You want a father to put you in his arms. You want a father to reach for you. You want a father to say, "I love you regardless of what you've done." And so that's this dad. He comes out to the other boy now. He comes out of the party, and he gets word, "Oh, your son's out there, he won't come." He comes out, and he pleads with him. Here's why he pleads with him. He knows how angry he is, and he pleads with him because you can make a choice when you're angry that will change your life for the rest of your life. And he's about to make that choice. He's like, "I'm not going in there. I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to be glad he came home." And his father comes out, and you need to hear this. You can make a choice that will fuse anger into your heart. And you just won't be mad about something anymore. You'll become mad. It's like you'll fuse it into your heart. And now what happens because of one choice, you might be thinking, "Oh yeah, one choice." Yeah, one choice. One defining moment can seal it into your heart. And now you're mad all the time. And he's a quiet mad. He's like, because he doesn't talk to anybody. He doesn't talk to his father. He doesn't ever talk to anybody. He doesn't say anything. He's a quiet mad. He's sort of like, "Look, I brought this Mountain Dew tonight." So you have this Mountain Dew here, and you look at this Mountain Dew, and you think, "A regular can of Mountain Dew." But if you're watching me now, and I'm shaking it like this, and then I walk over to you, and I get about a foot away from you, and I grab this tab right here, you're like, "Whoa." Because you know that even though, look at the Mountain Dew, even though it looks normal, you know that on the inside it's not normal. You take that, you pop that top off there, and that Mountain Dew's all over you. And if you ever walked up to somebody and you said just something that seems sort of small, and they just blow up. And they look like the Mountain Dew can. You're like, "Well, no big, everything's fine." And you just say something to them, and then all of a sudden just kaboom, it just blows up on you. Or maybe you at times are that person. You're like, why did I say that? Why did I react so strongly? Write this in your notes. Grab your pen, write this in your notes. Anytime, it's just in the margin. Anytime you suppress your anger, it's gaining energy. And it's just compressing and compressing. Every time, like you don't talk about it, you don't do this, what you're doing. And you're going like this, and you're going like this, and now, you know, you're just suppressing it. I'm not dealing with it. I don't care. I'm not going to talk about it. I go out and snowboard, and I fish, and I drink, and I hang out, and I got girlfriends or a wife or whatever. I feel good. I'm medicating. Everything's good. I got a really neat life. I graduated from college. I got a new car. I got four dogs. Whatever. You never dealt with it, and this is still going on right here. And let me tell you what. The energy is still inside that can, and someday, I'm telling you, someday, it's going to blow. This older son has kept it together for years. I'm the older son. I'm the religious guy. I follow the rules and everything. And one little party, man, he blows up. He's so angry. So I wanted to ask you a question. What are you angry about? And take a moment and think about it. Just think in your brain. What are you angry about? And nobody else could see it. Everybody else looks at it, seems like normal day for you. Same old person, same old guy. He's really angry at his dad. And maybe, listen to this now, maybe who you're angry with is God. And you can't talk to God about it. Now, if he was angry with anybody else, he'd like say, well, I'm angry with my dad or my mom. I said, why don't you pray and get some help from God to talk with them? But then if you're angry with God, how do you pray to God to get some help to talk to God? It's like, God, you know what? I really need some help to talk to you because I'm pissed off at you. And could you answer this prayer right now? I mean, isn't that kind of a weird prayer to pray? And I need to let you know something. He can handle it. He deserves a conversation. Who do you think you are to be angry at him and don't give him a chance to even talk? This is the way I talk to myself. Like, who do I think I am, man? Am I going to be angry at somebody? I'm not even. You wouldn't do that to your wife. I'm so mad at my wife, but I'm not even going to give her a chance to explain herself. You wouldn't do it to a friend. But lots of people do it to God. They don't even give God a don't even give him a chance. Don't even give him 30 seconds to explain himself. It's like, I'm mad at you. Number two, write in your notes. Drop your blame. It's interesting how the story goes, but the son does. He's really, really angry. He says, all these years. Listen, man, when you're angry, you know you're angry. You can pretend that everything is normal, but you know you're angry. And he's like, I've been mad for a really long time. I'm keeping track of the years. I've been mad for a long, long time. All these years I've been mad. He knows that. Can't fool yourself. And so he's like, all these years. And this is the part of the story that seems like it's kind of funky, but it's actually when he turns and starts to do something healthy. For the first time, he gets honest. He said, all these years, I felt like a slave in this family. I didn't feel like a son. It's your fault I'm unhappy. I've been keeping the rules. I've been doing the jobs. I've been working like I was supposed to. I did everything you ever asked. I followed all your orders. And what have I got for it? I feel like a slave. And sometimes churches can focus on the rules and they make religious slaves. And then people leave the church and they walk away from God and they're not sure what they're going to do. Maybe I'll get back to it just before I die. I say, quick prayer just in case that heaven thing is true. It's a quick one though, because I don't really believe in it anyways. I just believe we go into the ground and go away, and which is whatever. But I'm just saying, but most people though, right towards the end, they at least think it through one more time. If you're the kind of person that doesn't think that, I would challenge you, go read the life history of Charles Darwin. It's fascinating what happened to him at the end of his life. It's never publicized. And don't get any of the Christian stuff on it, because you know they'll always doll it up and everything. Oh, he got saved at a crusade. Don't go there. But just go read some good historical, critical literature on Darwin. It's amazing what happened at the end of his life, because he's rethinking everything. And most people do. But for those that don't, they're like in it, you know, and they're like, okay, you know, and you know, he starts to get honest. And he says, I felt like a religious slave here, man. That's why I've just been keeping the rules. And when churches are always pushing the rules, what happens is people feel really, really religious for a while, and then at some point they're like, hey, I'm out of here because I don't want to live like a slave anymore. I'm done. And so they just walk. And they walk because they're like, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what I'm really going to build my life on. I just know this. I'm not going to live that way anymore. And that's legit. I hope tons of them come to East Lake Church. We're here for them, actually. Because that's legit. Because guess what? I wouldn't stay in some stupid life that I didn't like either. That's what got me on the road with a backpack full of drugs when I was 19. I hated my life. I wanted to do something about it. So when people roll out of church, they're just doing a normal thing. They finally have the courage to say, I hate that life, man. I'm leaving that. Now, here's the problem. When you leave what you hate, you don't know where you're going necessarily. You know this, I'm not living that way anymore. But you don't necessarily know where you're going. And so he starts to tell his dad, he says, I hated that life, man. I hated being a slave in this family. I hated all the rules and everything. And here's what he's saying. It's your fault. I don't have the life I want. And some people, like, you may have a beef with God. It's your fault, God. And here's the really revealing things. You never even gave me a young goat. Which is very, it's revealing what he thinks of his father. He feels like, I've worked my butt off for you. I've done everything that you asked. I was really, really good. And all I ever wanted from you was like a scrawny little goat. You know what that says? I don't think you really like me, God. I don't really think you care about me. You don't want me to be happy. You're not going to lavish anything in my life. You're not going to do anything great for me. Whatever I'm ever going to get, I'm going to work for it myself. You're not going to do anything. Maybe if I'm really, really super, super good, you might give me a nickel. That's what he's saying. And he's mad. He's like, all I wanted from you, all I ever thought I was ever going to get anyways is a little goat, and you couldn't even do that for me. I kept my end of the bargain. And check out the jump he makes. He says, and it's your fault I don't have any friends. He's a blamer, man. You know what I've discovered about anger? It will always find someone to blame. And I found this out about anger, too. The angrier I get, the less I want to take responsibility for my life. Which is a problem, because the only way your life is ever going to get better is if you take responsibility for what? Your life. But the more angry I get, it's all about other people. It's your fault I don't have any friends, Dad. You didn't give me any money. In the beginning of this story, you go back and read it, Luke chapter 5, his father liquidates all his assets and he gives an equal portion to both boys. This guy's loaded, man. He's got a lot of money, but he doesn't spend any of his money to get friends. And here's why. There's a huge difference between wanting friends and doing something about having friends. He's like, nobody wants to be with me anyways. I'm not going to have any friends. It's your fault, Dad. It's your fault I don't have any friends. And I did want to ask the question, who are you blaming for your life? I spent years blaming my mom, long after she was dead. It's her fault. I flunked out of college. It's her fault I don't have a girlfriend. It's her fault. Nothing ever changed for me. Until I met Jesus. And this is all he said. He said, ask yourself this question. Who do you blame? And then I just be honest. Is it really their fault, man? I mean, is it 100% contribution? Every single thing is their fault? You didn't do anything at all? Ever? Doubt it. And so that's where this kid is. He's like, it's your fault I don't have anything. You never even gave me a young goat. And it's interesting that the dad doesn't argue with him. He doesn't even take it on. He doesn't argue, doesn't say anything to him at all. He totally blows up on him. Finally, like, this thing explodes finally. And he explodes all over the dad. And probably the dad's thinking, wait, let me get this straight now. Let's slow it down for a minute. You're really super, super angry at me because I love my son. Okay. You're mad at me because I love someone in our family. Isn't anger always a part of a much, much bigger story? He's like, so he doesn't even, like, he's so smart. He's so smart. He's so, like, I'm not like this. I always get involved, like, I'll take the bait as it goes by. I'm involved in an argument, and I'm arguing about a portion of something in the story that doesn't even matter because it's a much bigger story. And the father doesn't do that. He doesn't do it at all. Now, look at the next part. Right in your notes, restore your trust. So the son, you know, the older brother, he says to him, it's your fault I have an unhappy life. It's your fault I don't have any friends. And the dad doesn't say anything to him at all in terms of an argument. But here's what he does say to him. He says this to him. He says, and this is amazing, because you check this out. Don't miss it. If you're going to catch anything tonight, got here, he drove here anyways. You might as well catch this part. Catch this part. Listen, catch this part. You would think that the father would say to his son, son, I love you, and I'll always be with you. I mean, the son is really shaky, and you'd think he'd say something like, I'll always be with you. One of those really nice things that you hear sometimes, that God always loves you. You think that's what the father would say. He doesn't say it. In fact, he says just the opposite. Think about, why would he say this? His son is blowing up on him. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's your reason I don't have any friends. And the father says to him, you'll always be with me. And the son was probably like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Huh? What? I mean, why would he tell him, you'll always be with me? I mean, of all the things to say, I am so mad at you. My whole life sucks because of you. Son, you'll always be with me. Let me give you some insight into the scripture. What this guy's really struggling with is he doesn't trust himself anymore. He's lost his ability to believe that he can have a relationship with God. He's lost his ability to believe that he can even be a son in the family. All the things he thought he had to be in life, he's lost the ability to believe that he can be any of those things. And here's the biggest thing he's lost. He doesn't think he can even be with God anymore. In this story that Jesus is telling, the father is the God figure, and he says, I couldn't even go into the party and get you and talk with you. What's happened to me? I remember when I was 19 years old, and the drug addiction that took my mom's life, you know, you tell yourself something when that happens, I'm never going to do drugs, I'm never going to do that. It's like, and then, you know, you do. And it's weird. It's weird to be high on drugs when you know drugs killed your mother. That was my life. It was weird. It's like, whoa, I'm doing the exact same thing she did. And it was hard on my soul. And Jesus came to me at that time in my life in such a convincing way. I grew up throughout my life, and because of the alcohol and drugs in my family, it was a very scary place for me to live with my two sisters. And so a lot of times I didn't know how to pray, and I didn't know who God was. I just believed for some reason. And I would lay in my bed at night, and I'm not proud to say this, but I would beg God. God, please don't let her. I'd have these begging prayers. And so many times it seemed like he answered them. And so the next day, I'd be amazed by that, and my belief and my faith would grow in God. And I lived that way ever since I was in second grade until she died when I was a sophomore in high school. I lived that way, and I had this connection with God, although it wasn't church connection, but I just had it. It saved me. And then when I was 16, 17 years old, when I got hooked on drugs and when I chose that lifestyle and that became me, I was laying in bed one night. And it was all so much further than I wanted it to go. I had already done a lot of things that I said I would never do. And I felt bad about that. You know, you can be a hoodlum and a complete jerk and still feel bad about what you do. That was me. And I remember laying in bed one night and I go, I got to get back to praying to God. I remember when I was a kid, I used to pray to God, and I got to start praying to God again. But I was so high, because I was high all the time, and I couldn't pray. I couldn't connect with God. And I remember laying in my bed one night, and I was closing my eyes, and I was like, hey, I'm going to do it this time. Like, I'm going to start praying. I'm going to start praying. Then my brain get all freaked out, high, go off somewhere else. And I'd come back, and I'd go, gosh, man, I was going to pray. I was going to pray. And here's the thought, and this is what stopped me. Please hear this. It's when I said to myself, God, what happened to you? You can't even pray anymore. And that was my first step back. And somehow he orchestrated that. He knew what I needed. He knew exactly what I needed. And this father knows exactly what his son is standing there. He's not telling, but he's like, Dad, I don't even believe I can walk with God anymore. I don't think I can be a good son. I am shot, man. I'm so done. And his father says to him, I see something in you. you're never going to leave me. I'll always be with you. But that's not what you need to hear. You'll always be with me. I mean, is that like the ultimate vote of confidence? Someone doesn't tell you, like, how much they're going to love you. You're standing there feeling like, I can't love you. I'm not trustworthy. I'll never be able to do this. And they look at you and they say, you're going to always be with me. I see something about you. You're not going to keep going down that road. You're going to be with me. I see it in your heart already. The good part in your heart is going to win out over the bad. You're going to always be with me. He says exactly what his son needs to hear. And you may have come tonight and you may need to hear that too. Because listen, there's some things you'll never believe unless God says it to you. You can say it 100 times to yourself. The person you love the most in the world can come and tell you. It just doesn't work. But when God tells you, it does. He tells his son, you'll always be with me. And I don't know, Jesus doesn't tell how the story goes, so you can like he purposely doesn't end the story. We don't know what this son does. Here's my ending. It's like I'm not going to rewrite the Bible or anything, but I'm just telling you, like, this is how I think it ends. I think the son like stood there and thought, really? That's not who I think I am. You'll always be with me. But Dad, I am so mad. You'll always be with me. But I don't know what to do. I don't even know where to start to take responsibility for what I've done. You'll always be with me. Dad, you don't understand. I don't trust myself anymore. You'll always be with me. And right in your notes, right where it says the good news, God can make you glad. His father says, but we had to celebrate and be glad because the brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And circle the word we. But we had to. Here's what the father is saying. He's saying, son, we're not on the same page. We're not doing life together. We're not even together at all. I mean, look where we're having this conversation, son. I was in a party. I was going a whole different direction with my life, and you're outside here alone. We are not doing life together, but I'd like to. I don't want to go into the party without you. I don't want to celebrate the good thing that's happening for your brother without you. I want to do this with you, son. Now, I did say to you, Jesus leaves it open for however you want to finish this story. So you can see it like a little TV show, you know, and the director comes up and says, listen, we couldn't figure out how to end the story. Tell us what you think. So you can write how it all turns out. But here's what's more important. You get to write how it all turns out for you. The pencil's in your hand. The paper's on your table. You're sitting in a chair. You get to decide what you want to write when God says to you, you'll always be with me. Let's face it, we all have our doubts about who we are. And God says, you'll always be with me. It's like I see something in you and I know you've got your reasons for doubting. You'll always be with me. So how will you write it? It's yours to write. He's given you the privilege to join him at the party. Will you go in?